call this meeting to order on August 20th here in Mesquite. All of the notices have been posted, and we're all good that way.
Yes, sir.
Randy said he would lead us in the pledge today.
Perfect.
Pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, thank you. Is there any public comment at this time?
Do we have any public in Mesquite or in Overton?
Merlin's there, but I don't think there is.
Okay. Mr. Chair, if you will indulge me for just a minute.
Okay.
We have two kind of out of the norm things that I would like to bring up during public comment. First, I'm going to turn it over to Scott Fulman.
Okay. Hey, Board. Lupe, this is Lupe Duran. She is our new customer service hire. She's been on with OPD for 17 days.
Oh, wow.
And she is doing amazing.
Oh, wonderful.
So, want to welcome her to the
welcome.
Yes.
Has a nice smile.
Yes.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
She's got to run back. We invited her to stay. We're short staffed.
Oh.
So she's got to go cover.
Scott didn't let me do my presentation.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lupe.
Always next month.
That's what I told her.
Okay, the other thing that I would like just very quickly to talk about, each year you guys, or this year, you approve for us in our budget for both temporary and intern workers. So this year we had Alex Jett, Monty, and Gideon that came to work for us all in June. I do know your name, Jet. I don't know why I said Rhett. And each one of these young men worked in our lines department. We had Olivia and Lexi, who were a part of our internship program, and they came to work in May, and both of them worked in the engineering and administrative departments. So I asked these guys to join us tonight so that they could seek local governance in action to see who represents them in their communities and how it works. They are the future of our communities. So, and I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled with the work that they've done and the role that they've played for with us. Each of them have went through a full interview process with us. They learned and used our payroll system. They attended all of our safety trainings and department trainings that were held while they've worked for us. And they've assisted our departments in many tasks. I assured them personally that they would not have to give a speech. However, Mr. Chair, you are a retired teacher, and this is at your will. So if you would like to pepper them with questions or make them, you know, sing a number, whatever it is that you would like for them to do, I'm sure they would be happy to do
it. Which one is Jet? Are you the ball player?
Basketball?
That's what the future is, right?
That's right.
I don't believe Moapa Valley got any of those this year, did we there?
We had a really good basketball player for several years.
Oh, very good.
So these guys have all worked today, and they are welcome absolutely to stay and enjoy the meeting, if they need to get back to work or they have other things, practice or something else, then we're going to let them leave whenever they're ready. But I just wanted them to get to know. And I think that it would be nice if you guys introduced yourself and what district you represent so that they can associate who represents their family on our board making these decisions.
Okay. My name is Jack Nelson. I represent the Logandale District. And this year I'm serving as chairman of the board. This is my 11th year of being on the board.
My turn?
Yep.
Randy Lobb, I represent both valleys. I'm at the at-large seat, so how that works is both valleys will vote for a particular seat. I happen to run for that seat and win, and so I serve at the pleasure of those voters in both valleys. Honored to do so. I've been here 6 months.
Richard Jones, I represent Overton. I've been on the board now 6 years, and really enjoy serving on the Overton Power District Board.
Okay. Chad Levitz, I represent Moapa.
Dale Rust, I represent Mesquite. I've been on the board for 2 years.
And I'm Bob Bunker, I represent Bunkerville across the river right here.
And how many years have you been on the board?
I think the same as you.
Really?
Yeah, I got like a year and a half left or something.
Yeah.
Becky will have to tell me.
Pretty much, just over 10.
What about Mr. Mike Young?
I've been on the board for 10 years now and represent Mesquite.
Thank you.
Very good.
These young men have done a wonderful job. We are, when we hire good kids that know how to work, it restores your faith in what the future holds, and these kids have done that. So,
can we just have them say what their names are and what valley they're from?
My name's Gideon Bevan. I was just one of the summer help.
Which valley are you from?
Overton.
Okay.
My name's Monty, and I'm from the Overton as a temp.
My name is Jed Delano, and I'm from Virgin Valley.
I'm Alex Way. I'm here from Mesquite.
And they're not happy about this because I made them do the same thing at safety meetings.
Okay.
So.
Thank you, gentlemen. They did a really good job.
Yes.
Mr. Hardy, do you vouch for them?
They've done pretty good.
Well, wonderful.
Yeah, they made it through the summer.
Well, they haven't made it through yet.
They're right through. At 109, 10 degrees. That's a problem. Oh. All right. Okay.
Thank you.
Well, let us move forward then. Motion to accept the agenda.
So move.
Second. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Everyone in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, any? Oh, Mike? Did you
aye,
have
Mike?
There you go.
Okay, thanks. Any
opposed?
Any opposed? All right, so. Item E, approval of the minutes of the previous meeting. Looking for a motion.
I'd move we approve the minutes of our previous meeting.
Very good. We have a motion.
I'll second that.
Okay. Motion is second by Mr. Richard Jones. Everybody in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Is Mike with us?
I'm here. Aye.
Okay,
thank you.
Very good. Any opposed? Okay. On Chair's report, we've got a couple of thank you notes here from some of our scholarship recipients. I'll be here for you to read. One's from Ms. Peyton Davies, Moapa Valley, and Gavin Frederick from Moapa. Also, just a shout out to our manager and Miss Becky LeGros for a spectacular strategic planning session. The location, it was just all seemed like it ran so smoothly. I'm sure it didn't seem that smooth on your end, but it was wonderful. So thank you so much for that opportunity.
Thank you.
Okay, it's up to you, Mr. Attorney.
I have nothing at this time unless there's any questions for me for anything.
Okay, all right, Ms. Melissa.
All right, we'll go to manager's report. We're going to start with safety first, so Kyle will kick us off.
Okay, for the month of July, our safety meeting that we had, with ESCI, we had topics of hearing, ergonomics, and ladder safety. We had a good attendance, even being that it was held in July, and there sure is a lot of vacations that happen that time of year. After a safe meeting that day, we held a line department, we hold department trainings for most departments, but for line department, these are the two topics that we hold, or held, sorry. We hold these most every month. We try to do it every month, but I want to start sharing with you what we accomplished during those department trainings. So I'd be sure and schedule that we have time to do department training, but then I task many of my manpower to lead those events during that day. That's right after safety meeting. So for this first one on the left here, we had a tourniquets and stop the bleed training by Mike Abbott and Zach Barnum. They had recently just been to Grand Junction Hotline School, and they've been through a great course where they brought back a lot of information on that there. So doesn't really capture Mike and Zach here in this picture, but that's what this whole classroom here is going over is they took little pool noodles, slid in it, and learned from those two men on how to stop the bleed. And we tried out our new tourniquet kits that we're carrying in our trucks. On the right, we've been working continually on our fall rescue practices, trying to grow those practices. We have training every year from ESCI, but we want to do one better than what we're getting trained. So we've taken it upon ourselves out in our practice pole yard in Overton to install a vault, and we're getting new tooling. We're getting the tooling, but then also we're putting it to practice so that we know for sure that we can get that accomplished if we need to in an emergency. And that was led by Cody Hardy and Omar Vallejo in the back room there. So great department training was held July 17th after safety meeting. Outages for the month of June. I'll be reporting on June and July for the outages because the way board meetings landed last time. But for the month of June, there was quite a few unplanned outages. If you remember, it seems like forever ago, we had some storms that come through, especially through the Bunkerville area. Lightning storms come through early June. To note also, there's many of these here that are the Bunkerville B ones that are all mirrored the same. Those are the same outage, but they're split into three different categories because that's when customers came back on periodically through that outage. You know, initially we had lots of customers off down low. They were only off for 61 minutes, and then we brought them back on, and then the other two sets are the other portions of that outage. So it looks like a lot, but that one and the one later down here in Overton is the same outage, just kind of just broke up into two different or multiple outages. Let's see, so we got a dig in at the top from a customer. He dug through his own service. There was a lot of minutes associated with that because, quite honestly, it was a customer that's kind of one off by himself. He tore through it with a dozer, and it was going to have to be out for some time. So that stands out as being a lot of minutes being out, but it was because it was left that way for, if I remember right, the weekend. We have poles damaged by fire. I want to make sure that you understand that it wasn't necessarily a pole fire. It was an RV that was next to the pole that caught fire that required a power outage. We disconnected because it was so close to our poles. We've got, sorry, I had to make notes. There were so many here. conductor failure, service URD. There's a lot of minutes there. It's the same kind of story as the customer above that dug theirs. This was at a pit here in the Bunkerville area where the underground wire feeding that pit faulted. It overheated, faulted, it went bad. They didn't need, well, we obviously had to do a lot of work to get it repaired, so it took a long time. We left it off for the weekend. Yeah, it was from Friday clear till Monday before we got a return service. So that stands out there, but that was disconnected. It's just how it is titled on here. Let's see. Wind caused by rain. That was an awning that blew off a house, blew up off a neighbor's house, blew across into the other neighbor's yard, but it blew across the single phase line there in downtown Overton behind the Pioneer Theater. So 12 unplanned outages and 5 planned outages happened in the month of June. For the month of July, it was more of our normal. We had 2 unplanned outages and with a lot of maintenance in between. Planned outages. Nothing really to note there. A couple of blown fuses, but they're just the errant fuses that blow at times, so we can't really point a finger at it, quite honestly. The one was the 4th of July, and so the men went out that morning and did everything they could, popping switches, trying to find it, but never did determine what it was that caused that through this industrial area out towards Crown. But I want to make sure to note, too, that was a lot of outages that we had in the last couple months, but I want to note that our stats are still very high. We're still at an AC of 99.997. We're very high, doing very well this year. In comparison to the last few years, our Sadie is at 9.7 minutes right now, so that's the amount of time spread across all our customers that they're out of power. That is very good. I was looking at last year, obviously we had a system-wide outage, so last year was very high. It was end up being 133 minutes for the year, so we're doing very good. 2023, we were at 26 minutes for the end of the year. So our stats are still staying very, very good, even with the June that we had. Doing very good. Service installations for the month of June, we had 54 total. We had one commercial and then 53 residential spread across. We still have many in the Pulte area out of Dinosaur Substation. Pulsifer, I noticed, is picking up quite a few. You'll notice this year as well as, or sorry, this month as well as July had more. So that's those. Pulsifer is down near Casablanca, and it's kind of that downtown area with the commercial, with the apartment complexes that are coming in, that picking up some service connects there. And then over in Logandale, we have four connects there in Whipple Substation, which is high for that valley. So
let's go Logandale. Yeah.
Doing good. And then like we spoke for July, same Dinosaur Substation, which is Pulte Homes, always has consistently high. Canyon Crest has not been as much lately as it has been, but Pulsifer is picking up there, so just another average month.
More commercials in here.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Last month you mentioned that Pulsifer was almost at maximum load, and they're having the more hookups. So.
Correct.
That's been corrected, I guess.
So the Falcon Ridge Substation, we've pushed some of that load from Pulsifer to that Falcon Ridge Substation.
Okay.
And so we've unloaded that substation quite a bit.
All right.
Thank you. And then service installations for the year, we're sitting at 268 right now. As we've seen, it looks like it's going to be very average. I don't know what's coming up on the pipe to say how we're going to end up, but that gives you a good snapshot of where we've been and potential going to for this year. This is another tooling and practice that my team has been adopting and growing constantly. I've been very proud of them for being receptive to it. Shoring practices in the construction construction field, is pretty lackadaisical at times. We've taken upon ourselves to take it to top notch. We're trying to do it on to power. We found that these pieces here on the left, they show the different pieces that are needed to accomplish this work here on the right. It's hard to tell, but that's us taking conduit into a vault. That's a vault there on the right. That's a 4-foot trench, so it's right at the limit of what's necessary for shoring, but I was very happy to get a picture from the foreman here and showing that our men are using these. It's a simple process. For the money spent, it's actually very economical. We're very happy with it, and we'll continue to keep using these, but also looking for the next best thing and making sure that we're growing with technology into the future. This is another one too. As we've seen our neighbors, Garcane to the north, they've had some horrible fires around the west lately. We're very fortunate. We don't have a lot of fire territory, but many of us that have been here long enough that know that Warm Springs, which is there on the right, has got a lot of vegetation, and it has burned down our power lines in the past. It's been 22-ish years, I'm gonna guess. But we continue to keep up on that every year, not only by brushing around our poles and underneath our lines, but now we're starting to adopt this pole wrap. We saw a sales rep, I think it was NREA annual meetings last year, that had a chunk of this, and at the back of the room was pitching it to all of us. It's been something that's been on our mind, and quite honestly, when we looked into it and talked with other neighboring utilities, it's a great product, especially for the cost and what it can prevent. So a lot of these men here in the back, especially the Overton men, have been out as they're brushing around these poles. They've been installing it, just like Monty has right here in this picture on the left, kind of demonstrating what it takes to install. It's very simple. They dig down into the ground 6-8 inches, so it's buried underneath the ground where the fire can't get to. Cut it to length, staple it to the pole, and clear the brush around it and keep moving on. So that's one of those practices that we're also adopting with our fire mitigation plan to avoid problems in the future. They, I was talking with Cody today, got roughly 60 poles installed this year up through the Warm Springs area, down through the area behind the, there's a lot of small pockets of areas that have vegetation, and we got a good portion of those covered this year, and we'll keep moving forward with that in the future. This is another one that we have adopted this year. We've hired a company out of Ely, in fact, that SNWA up in Warm Springs have been using to mitigate the brush. It includes spraying for pre-emergent and weed killer through these areas underneath our lines. A lot of these you can go through and brush with a skid steer 1 month, and then 3 months later, with all the moisture that's in the ground, you're going to need to be right back there. So we're trying to figure out a solution that might last more time. With spraying this, it takes three sprays before it becomes sterile ground, essentially, and what the title is. So this is a tough picture. Like, I thought, well, should I post this one or not? Because it doesn't look very cleared off. But if I can explain to you, like, these portions here where it's dead is where they can spray. But if you know this area next to the Riverside Bridge, there's many ditches through here. Bob's probably really familiar with it. So everywhere that has green is the waterways. And they can spray that sterilization, that pre-emergent, up to a point near that water. But they can't spray up to the water because obviously they don't want to affect crops down line. So it does show that through the areas where they sprayed, got really good success with that, just in the one time that we've done it this year. But the areas obviously outside of that, we'll have these young men at the back of the room, the next generation, they'll be going through there and keeping that brush down and making sure that we don't have fires that travel through that area. And then we also always have our tree trimmers in the background that are going throughout our system. Not only the sprayer, this contractor here was spraying, but we're also trying to tackle the pole rat that I've spoken to now. So we're trying to stay ahead of it. Any questions? Any thoughts? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Kyle. Next up, we have Randall with Engineering Services. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for sticking around just for mine.
You see, they stroke the ego of their boss. They listen to him, and then out they went. It's good to be king. Ready?
So going forward, whenever we complete a capital project, I'll give you guys an accounting of that job. And then every six months, I'll give you an update on how the projects are going based on the budget and expenses. So starting today, I'm going to give you we finished the Raptor transmission line. I'm going to give you a full accounting of how that closed out, and then give you an update of all the current major projects, and in 6 months, I'll give you an update. Some of the most of those will be closing out at the end of this year. So this is the Raptor line. This is going from Raptor substation on up to Long Drive Switchyard. Now, there is a typo on this slide, and whoever gets it first gets a piece of cheesecake. Anyway, it's Long Drive Switchyard, and I have Gila on there, but it should be Raptor. So our approved budget was $1.8 million. Our total costs were $3,100,000. We had $500,000 in contributions from Crown with an over budget of $833,000. The major reason for the over budget is, as we planned the project, we looked at it, we felt that there'd be about 19 foundations. It ended up, after engineering, with 29 foundations as it winded down through from Long Drive down to Raptor. And the difference between those foundation numbers, plus each foundation was twice that we normally pay, there was a difference of $585,000. And then our poles were budgeted at $700,000, and the lowest bid came in at $885,000 with a difference of $185,000. So that's the major difference of the over budget on that project. Are there any questions? Good. The next one we're going to talk about, so if you look up here, this is Torta Substation, and we're ready, we have this all graded and ready for the 69 bay to be built out, and also the 230 ring bus to be expanded to feed that bay. And that contractor is starting in September to do that work next month. Currently, the approved budget was $10,921,000. Our cost stayed at $7.6 million. Estimated cost to complete is $1.2 million, with an under budget projection of $2 million. And the major reason for the under budget projection is that anytime we do a project, there's always contingency money in there. And during this year of COVID, all of the preliminary numbers we received for equipment, they gave us, but they couldn't guarantee those numbers. So we added probably 20% contingency in this project. Fortunately, all the numbers came back in on the quotes, so we're looking at a under budget projection. The 69 kV transformer bay budgeted at $5.1 million. Total cost to date at $4.2 million. Estimated cost to complete are $600,000, with projected under budget of $264,000. And both those last two jobs are basically contractor and testing and commissioning left, is all that's left. All the materials are in. This is the transmission line, Tortoise to Gila. This is from the Gila substation going up Riverside Road and up towards the freeway. And they are up to the mesa right now. The contractor is experiencing some tough digging up on top there on that shelf.
I saw him drilling up there today.
Yeah, they're drilling one hole per day.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's really
hard. Because it's hard or because it's too sandy?
Too hard.
No, it's caliche.
Caliche, that's all a rock shelf as we jump caliche up on top. They were getting six holes a day and planting six poles per day framed up. We're hoping that we did pre-soils report, soils testing for them, so they should get off that shelf here in the next few poles, so it should go a lot better for them. The Tortoise to Gila budget was $17.9 million, total cost to date at $9 million, estimated cost to complete at $8 million, with projected under budget of $505,000. And basically, some of the unknown costs right now are tortoise monitoring, soil reclamation. Tortoise monitoring is costing us about $50,000 a month to have the monitors out there. And then we have testing and commissioning, obviously, when we go to energize the line. And soil reclamation is based on, so we have to put all the soil back to original. Whatever thing that was disturbed, we have to come back in, flatten it out, seed it, and everything.
And so, making you rock it?
What's that?
Not making you put down rock?
No. We bring in seed to make it so it grows back and looks like it was before we were there. So our disturbed areas, we don't have to. We have permanent service areas that we don't have to work on. But anything that's not in that area, it has to be redone. And based on how the contractor works, we have a certain area around the pole that they give us. But anything outside of that area has to be reseeded.
Okay, because lately the dust permit is requiring rock as the final product. They're not letting us seed half the projects anymore.
Wow. Okay, well this was approved like 2 or 3 years ago, so okay. You're right. So currently that might
hopefully
change.
That's a nasty price.
Is it?
For the rock?
Yes. Yeah.
So, long drive switch yard, we're all ready for the contractor to come in and start setting steel. We received the steel for Raptor, and the steel for long drive is supposed to be here at the end of this month, and they'll be able to start working on those projects. And both of those should be completed by the end of the year. The long drive switch yard and Raptor substation approved budget was a little over $10 million. Total cost to date, $10,800,000. Estimated cost to complete, $1.9 million. We have Crown contributions of $2.7 million. Projected under budget of $381,000. And we still have contractor testing commissioning and steel. The Bridge Source Mine, they continue to make progress. The environmental company that's working for them reached out for some more data, so they continue to work on their side. We also know that the gas company has reached out to us with right-of-way issues. So they're working with the gas company to get gas brought down to the Lewis property. And then on the right, Moapa West, we continue to work with NVE. We recently had a meeting with Weston and one of his head people, Dave Brown, and they expressed a desire to continue to work on the project and to make it a project that people in Moab will be happy with. And so hopefully that pans out. They continue to work on that. And that's all I have. If you have any questions, thank you.
Thank you, Randall. Next up, we have Kevin with SubOps.
So the picture there on the right is up here at Painted Hills Distribution Substation. We've flattened out a pad for our let's see if I can make this work. Okay, so on the left-hand side, that equipment there on the left-hand side, we're going to move up there to Painted Hills and expand that Painted Hills substation from a 30 MVA substation to a 40 MVA substation. So at Arrowhead, we're taking the two 10 MVA transformers and replacing them with two 20 MVA transformers, making it a 40 MVA substation. Like I say, the 110 MVA is moving up here, and then the other 10 MVA is going to move to Overton to replace the old Maloney that's over there, and I think it was dated at 64, I think is the date on that. But we're a little nervous about that transformer. Anyway, the transformer that's there at Mesquite is a sister to the one that's in Overton that will be paired up with it, so it's a good match for that transformer as well. But this is pictures of them making the pad on the right to put that equipment. So,
Kevin, question. It looks like it's going to limit your access into that station. That's kind of your roadway into there right now.
So we have plenty of access on the left-hand side of that pad. We'll be able to get lots of big equipment. And we'll have to take a couple of panels down on the fence so we can come through the transmission yard in. And then on the right-hand side, there'll be enough space. There'll basically be enough, the same amount of space as what's on the north side. So you can drive a pickup truck, a service truck through there, but you won't be able to get a crane or a bigger truck through there. But through the center, we'll have space. Wrong way. So the picture on the right, the picture on the left is the equipment that's in the Arrowhead sub currently, and it will go on in the Painted Hills substation, which is the picture on the right. So that empty bay you see in that rack, all of that equipment on the left is going to go in there. So the substation guys have been up there doing a lot of work. They're going to be pulling a lot of cable between all of this. The two relays that are in on the right-hand side, they're just basically templates, and they'll wire from there to the test switches, and then they've set a new cabinet. I'm going to get this right someday. On the outside. So on the left-hand side, we had a cabinet. You can see where Tanner's standing. That cabinet had our AMI equipment in it. And so what they did is they pulled that cabinet down, and on the picture on the right, they installed that cabinet. And so we'll add more AMI equipment in there, and it'll also be a pass-through for the new control cabling going out to that substation into the building. And they'll have all of that wired up, hopefully before anything's done with moving that equipment up to the north, up to Painted Hills from Arrowhead. And I kind of want to throw this in there. Why is this important? We our operating guidelines that we use come from OPD's construction work plan. And it states that substation power transformers to be loaded no more than 70% of nameplate rating for normal conditions and no more than 105% of nameplate ratings for emergency conditions. This is kind of what we go off of. And the reason we do that is for reliability. If we have a transformer and substation loaded at 70%, we have to take that out of service for any reason. We have two transformers that we can feed that load from, and we can load them up to 105%. That gives us our 70% that we can pull that off of and still run without having to have outages. And that's why we do that. Our our substation up here, we have been at 70% at that substation, 70% and above at that substation, this Painted Hill substation, for probably 10 years. And we keep shifting load, moving things around to keep it at or below that 70%. And all we're really doing is increasing the load on the other substations we're pushing that off on. So moving that 10 up there will give us the more capacity that we need to stay within our 70, below our 70% on that one. And then adding the 220 MVAs down in Mesquite will give us that capacity in the Mesquite area also. So that where the Mesquite substation has been running between 75 and 85% during the summers for the last couple of years. So
Arrowhead.
So anyway, that's why we're working on these projects, and it's for reliability. This is kind of the map that we have right now, and I don't know if this pointer thing works. How did you
turn it? It's center.
The center one?
Yeah.
So, oh yeah, that's nice. So these are where these substations feed, these areas that I've blotted out. So we've got Canyon Crest, Painted Hills, Arrowhead, Pulsifer, Falcon Ridge, Dinosaur, and down here in the bottom is Bunkerville. And we've got this, the Dinosaur substation is, it's actually, it comes over here like this, but it's pretty well loaded up. Mesquite, Painted Hills is pretty loaded up. We've moved some load off of Pulsifer, but it's only a 10 MVA substation. And then the Mesquite substation. So right now,
Arrowhead,
it's going to be hard to change. It's been called Mesquite Substation for 25 years for me.
We're selling them on Arrowhead tonight.
It's Arrowhead Substation. So right now, between all of our substations in the Mesquite area, we got 157.5 MVA. I checked, and let's see, I'm going to jump. Oh, I don't have it up here. Anyway, in 2024, we was at 102 megawatts in Mesquite. The load in Mesquite was 102 megawatts. So we're getting up there on that. In a couple of years, this is how I want to lay out the feeders. And when we're done with our rebuilding of the Mesquite substation and moving all of the things that we're going to move around.
Is it Mesquite substation?
It's the Arrowhead substation.
All right,
just anyway, we'll have 247 and a half megawatts. So we're going to increase by almost 100 MVA by doing this, and that'll set us up for quite a while in the area. And hopefully we can keep everything balanced out to where this is the last big distribution change we have to make for a long time, unless, of course, more growth comes in. And then when more growth comes in, hopefully we can get a substation for that growth. So anyway.
And with those seven, how many of them are over 70 right now, percent?
We've got Painted Hills, all three bays at Painted Hills, all three bays at Mesquite, now only one bay at Pulsifer. Dinosaur, one of the bays at Dinosaur is approaching that. But once we've got some infrastructure to get in place, once we get that infrastructure in place, the Dinosaur and Falcon Ridge and Pulsifer, we'll all get that straightened out. That'll be good. And then once we get the rest of these moves done, we'll fix the rest of it. So
we need to complete Arrowhead, and we need to upgrade. We need to complete Raptor, and we need to upgrade Arrowhead, moving some from Arrowhead here to Painted Hills, and that shift changes all of that dynamic.
Falcon Ridge sub second bay also.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of load that's got to go to Falcon Ridge to pull a lot of this stuff off too. So anyway, hopefully we'll be set up for the future after all of these upgrades that we make. So, any questions on that? Okay. Escape Solar, I just wanted to update you on that. They tied in last night. They tied in the Tesla battery system. and they're going to start charging that with their excess solar. So they're shooting for October 1st to get everything done and all of that, all their full capacity online. And I think they're going to make it because they are really working hard up there. We've been working with ECI, Engineering Consultant, to look at our relay settings, make sure that their extra load they're putting on our system is not going to cause us problems. And so far, they've said, yes, it's not going to cause you any problems, but there's better ways to protect our system. So they're going to look into that for us. They've looked at load flow studies and an Aspen model review to make sure that the rest of our system is looking good, too, for that.
So this says by October 1st, they contracts July 1st, have they started providing us power?
Yes.
Just having to complete
there's a fourth off-taker that is getting the rest of it, okay. The batteries and excess solar.
Okay, great. So.
We had anticipated that the wheeling fee that we would charge, because their initial build-out was for 70 megawatts, and that was us and two other off-takers, and then they had a fourth off-taker that was going to do battery and solar. We didn't think that that was going to come on for 2 years. We're actually getting that now. We're charging them for that available capacity starting on June 30th.
Nice.
Yeah.
So that's good. ECI has got some suggestions for protection to make it better. One of the things with solar versus generation, I don't know if you guys want me to elaborate on this or not, but I'm probably going to anyway.
No, Kevin, when you've
bring
got a generator,
so
when you've got a generator, you've got a hard resource that if you have a fault, it's gonna load that down. That generator is gonna bog down, right? With the solar and the inverter powered units, it will sense a load basically, and it'll say, I'm putting out too much power, I'm gonna shut it down. So it drops down that output, and what happens is when they drop that output down, it doesn't sense a fault. It has to come from a different source to sense that fault. Where our lines are still protected, but not like they should be. So that's what they're suggesting, is we put a different style of protection on our system, and it's only between Dinosaur Substation and Painted Hills. It's just that little section. The rest of it, we've already done that in our new line builds. We have that style of protection. It's just that little section. So anyway, we're going to be looking seriously into that and seeing what we need to do with that. And it's called a line differential. It senses what goes in versus what comes out. And if there's something different, it opens. And so it works a lot better. We've been working with NV Energy to get a lot of live data points from our SCADA system to their SCADA system. NV Energy is our balancing authority, so if something happens to this big generator up here and it goes offline, they want to see everything back. And so if they need to get some assets online, they can get them online quickly. So they want to have. So we've been working with that. And we've got that link up and running, and the points to them. I think they're building their SCADA screens and waiting. They're building their screens now, I believe, and once they get that done, they'll come back to us and say, okay, we want to test this and make sure it all works. So that's what they're waiting on now. I worked with Escape Solar a couple of nights, actually a couple of evenings, late evenings, when our load was the highest, to match our voltage with what's coming in on both ends. So both ends match on voltage. And it fixed a lot of problems we were having through our system. So their outgoing voltage and our voltage on the other end match now, and it helps our VAR flow and our power factor. So that's some things that we've done. So anyway, any questions on that?
Okay, thank you, Kevin. Next up, we have Scott with Administrative Services.
Finally. All right, cybersecurity report for August. Okay, cybersecurity training. In the month of June, we had 95% and 96% completion We talked about legacy system vulnerabilities. That's old systems that are on the old machines and in routers and switches and software that are on the system. Social media risk, corporate espionage, and security training importance. Phishing results, we're looking pretty good. We've had nobody click on our emails the last couple months. We saw 36,000 email and almost 5,000 of those were spam in the month of July. That is our blocks by country. Our server system uptime remains strong at 100%. 100% across the board for our data backup and restoration. Those were both tested, the backup and the restoration in the month of July. Our EISAC, we got 97 emails in the month of July. And so I use AI to look at the top three security patterns. I dump all of these emails into it and I say, show me the top security threat patterns. We can get very detailed, but I said, you know what, AI, this is for a board. This is for, you know, let's make this very, very simple. And so I'm not saying that I said, talk to me like I'm a third grader, but this is the equivalent of that. So these, these are the top security threat patterns, fake email scams. And so then if you read these, it's very easy to understand what was going on with all of these utilities that report to the EISAC. There are many warnings about bad people sending tricky emails that to pretend to be from trusted groups or important people. So fake email scams was one of the top three, website overload attacks, and physical damage or theft. So some troublemakers are trying to crash websites. So very simple to understand. I don't know if you guys want the more technical stuff or the simple stuff, but we'll switch it up. One of the annual things I like to report on is the penetration testing. So we do penetration testing annually. We do internal, we do external. This is an internal penetration test. There is a physical device that's installed on the network and then it just goes to town. I don't share anything with the board as far as the results of that because it's an open meeting and I don't want to put that on our screens. All I will say is that it is done for the year. We did a fantastic job. There are a lot of things to work on, but a lot of things we're doing wonderfully. This was one of the statements from that. Overton Power District continues to exhibit a clear desire to protect sensitive customer and organization information and has developed a cohesive information security program as a whole. The following areas were executed incredibly well, and then it went on to list what was well, and it went on to list what needed work. So that is finished for the year, but we'll continue to work on those things that we need to. That's it. Is there any questions?
Thank you, Scott.
Yep.
Next up, we have Jonathan with Financial Services.
All right, we had a great month for July. We're super excited to report that we had net margins for July and actually 1.1 million were our net margins. But before we get there, our revenue on line one, 6.2 million. Our cost of purchase power on line three, 3.8 million. So we had budgeted for July to be at 4.6, we're actually in at 3.8. A lot of that came to the solar coming online and being performing better than we, well, actually it was the solar performed pretty close to what we were anticipating, but at the time when we made the budget, we didn't know exactly what that was going to be. So our total cost electric service on line 20, 5.8 million almost, and then our line 22 interest received on investments, 44,000, and again our margins on line 29, 1.13 million. So before we get too excited about the 1.1 million. That's a great number. We're super excited about it. There are some details that contribute to that. So our revenue received from energy doesn't quite contribute to all of that. So we had several large jobs that we closed in July that contributed to that. So we had a $500,000, the Raptor transmission line that Randall reported on. And then we also had two other fairly large jobs for $100,000. And then within that is our first full month of our charging the Escape Solar for the wheeling fee of around $100,000. So all in all, at $700,000 still, we budgeted to be at just over $200,000 in net margins. And we were, if you back out the non-electric, well, the large projects, large jobs, we were right at over $450,000. So about double what we had budgeted. So with all that being said, our year-to-date margin is 1.4, and our budget is at 1.68. So from January to June, we were below that budget for, you know, pretty much every month, and now we're fairly close to being right to where we were anticipating.
I want to give Jonathan just a moment. Mm-hmm. He's new, and this is his first time to get to report to you guys really good news. And I don't know if you can tell, but this is Jonathan excited. So.
I was super excited while we were working out the numbers. And Melissa and I were talking. I'm like, hey, if these are going to be over budget, we got to celebrate. Go get a nice coffee or lemonade or something. But I was super excited. I was still a little hesitant. I was like, I don't know if this is actually legit, but as we go over it again and again, I'm like, these are spot on.
He called me at the NREA meeting because he just could not wait to give me some good news. Like, we have $1 million margin. And so I want to say, like, I'm so happy for Jonathan that he finally gets to come to you guys and report some really good news. The great thing that I think that this is spelling out, though, that we first kicked off in January with you was, January to June were going to be difficult months. We knew that without that solar, it was going to be difficult. And we've been hesitant to be too excited about even the solar coming on because we didn't know exactly what they were going to produce. The great news that Jonathan gets to report is they're producing what we anticipated, and we're seeing the margins. So had we not closed those jobs, had we not had any of that non-electric revenue, we still would have reported above what was anticipated. And you guys are used to hearing that. He's just not used to getting to deliver that to you guys yet. So thank you, Jonathan.
When you said the closing jobs thing, that's where we came in under.
So that's actually when we have customers that are required to contribute to the job funds, then that's where up and above the substation, the normal.
So we had impact and connect fees, but then we also had that contribution on the job that Randall reported on tonight.
$500,000 from Crown. Mm-hmm.
Breathe a little better, right?
Yes. Sigh relief. Yeah. That's what I was thinking. Pretty much all day today. So.
I never got her.
So, I guess it froze on me here. So next is the balance sheet. So on our line 5 net utility plant continues to grow. 157, almost 158 million. We have our line 8 investments in associated organizations, our line 15 cash, line 18 temporary investments, our line 23 inventory, materials and supplies, which brings us to our total assets for OPD line 29 at just under 189 million. And so on the liabilities and equity side, so who owns those assets? So OPD owns, so for line 26, our margins and equity, we own 129 million of those assets. And then part of the portion of the assets that we don't own, our long-term debt on line 43, and we have our accounts payable, and then our total liabilities and equities is, you know, almost $189 million.
We didn't come back down without calling us out.
I know we're doing a lot of the equities with equity to asset ratios, and well, basically this is what we're doing here. This is the part we own. So our modified debt service coverage ratio. So this is estimates through the end of the year. So we are at 1.85, and we're right on our goal. Our average. Well, not our average, but the average by utility size is 2.10, and minimum is 1.35. That's set by CFC to receive our full discounts on our loans. Thank you. Our equity as a percentage of assets, 68%. Might just need to put this down. Equity as percentage of assets. So our goal that we set in strategic planning, not this last few times ago, that's basically what we're trying to meet, is at 57%, average by size 48%, and then CFC sets a minimum. That's basically a safe hold, just below 40%. So that gives room to, if things happen, you go below that and you're still okay, but that's where they offer discounts also. But we're at 68%. So our times interest earned ratio, so this ratio, this is current year to date. Unlike our modified debt service coverage ratio, that's with estimates through the end of the year. This is our current year to date, and this is where our goal is. So we're on pace to meet the goal, but for year to date, we're at 2.48. So our cash up at the top in our checking accounts, we close with a value of $5,025,000. And towards the bottom, our Morton account closed at $9,196,000. And our Goldman Sachs account, just over $4,000. So the breakdown by security type in our Morton account at top, in the pie chart, and then by duration, by our securities in the bar graph. So as of July 31st, we have a total of 18,987 customers. We had an increase of 55 from July and 54 from June. So we are super close to making that 19,000 number for customers. I don't know if you might notice, but these are all a little different. I got graphs here.
He's living on the wild side. You guys don't even know.
He's more excited about the graphs than he was the money.
Our connection fees here for July, $34,609, a total of 35. The current billing arrangements for residential customers, we have 19,960 with a total of 79 customers. And then for our commercial customers, we have 3 totaling 492. This amount again goes up in the summer months, and then usually tailors back down. Roundup program balances in each valley there. And then our loans with CFC, we have a total balance of outstanding balance of $44,583,000. Our last payment was made on time and paid in full in June, on June 30th, for the $1.432 million. And then our average rate of our average interest rate after our discounts is 3.35%. And then here's the breakdown of our revenue by customer class, each customer line there, and then here's our totals. We have for the month of July, our monthly costs went down quite a bit. Now it's all due. We did start receiving some solar in June. The last day of June, we actually had full solar, and then we had test power in June also for about 2 weeks, and it wasn't the full amount that we were supposed to, or that we were that we received daily, but there was a little bit of that in there. But with July, you can see that our monthly costs went down quite a bit to 7.26 cents per kilowatt hour, and then our monthly revenue 11.57 cents, and then our 2025 average cost of kilowatt hour is 7.68 cents. So any question, anybody have any questions there with this one or the previous slide?
So I can see the price went down, but compared to May, it didn't go down that much. It was, like, I guess I was expecting to see a bigger jump than that, because
right.
It's a pretty sizable chunk of power.
It's right. About 14% of our portfolio is going to come from solar. And of course, that varies through the year, and that's the same with our hydro. We're getting less hydro right now in the summer. We're going to get more solar, and then there will be months that we get more hydro in like the spring, and we get less solar. So,
so our hydro was almost double in May than it was in July.
That makes sense.
And that concludes my presentation, unless you have any further questions.
Thank you, Jonathan.
You're welcome.
I have another 8 cents right here.
Us too. Okay. I attended, Stephen, you just, there we go. I'm going to have to put us through a training, you guys, on the clicker again. We got reprimanded by Coop many years ago about not knowing how to run these in the meeting, and then here we are. Okay, I attended a number of meetings. I'm not going to go over every single one of you with you, but I wanted to just tell you a few things. I went to CRETA in June in Grand Junction, and we met with WAPA and the Bureau of Reclamation, and that felt bleak. I mean, gosh, when I left those meetings, when you start talking about the Colorado River, and WAPA discussed with us all of the hardships that they're having as a result of losing staff, same with Bureau of Reclamation, the overtime that they're paying for their current staff. They were asking for emergency lifting of the hiring freeze so that they could still continue to do all of the jobs that they needed to do. Yet they Bureau of Reclamation still visited with us about the need for the releasing of water to cool so that they could ensure that the bass do not spawn up the river. All of that water is sent down the river with no hydropower gain from releasing that water. I was just wishing that, you know, if they had to lay off some of those employees, or some of those employees took the early retirement, it would have been those that were in charge of those studies.
Yes.
One of the things that they did discuss, though, that is of concern to me, and we're going to watch this closely, we call it LIHEA here. There they called it LIHEA, but it is some of the federal funding that goes for low-income families to get help with their power bills, and we currently have customers that have aid from that. In the big, beautiful bill that was passed in July, part of that was that it was going to completely cut LIHEA down to zero. And so we're going to monitor that closely to make sure that those customers that we have that are have those fundings already set for 2025 and are maybe counting on them for 2026 and won't have them, we'll work to see what we can do.
Do you have an idea how many is that, like?
I don't.
How many people?
I don't. I need to. I need to check on it more to make sure that it is truly going to go down to zero and that there isn't other state funding that's going to help pick it up, and then we'll look at what customer base, how much of that customer is going to be affected. And again, that will 25, they've already gotten their application, so we'll need to make sure that we have it taken care of by 2026 for them.
Do you know how many we have that are on it?
No.
Okay.
I don't have that number memorized. They talked about the low snowpack, very low water flow, operations look bleak. This is one of five driest years since 2000, and it is 54% of normal inflow into Lake Powell. So the studies show that in spring of 2026, we will hit drought contingency. One of the things that Becky reported to us on in our manager's meeting yesterday, though, was that the Farmer's Almanac came out, and they say that for the remainder of 2025 that we're going to see average and wet. So if the Farmer's Almanac, which I have some faith in, is correct, maybe we will see a wet year in those upper basins, and we can build some of that water back up. It's hard to guess. I met with Governor's Office of Financial Assistance. You guys remember that we submitted grant funding for around $787,000 for a project for fire mitigation. In addition to that, we submitted to the Governor's Office of Financial Assistance the Governor's Office of Energy's grant requires that we had matching funds. Governor's Office of Financial Assistance said, we can match your requirements for your matching funds. So we put in for that match as well, and we did receive notification in July that we were issued those funds. So that is $189,000 that we've been guaranteed. Now, they will not issue those funds until we receive the grant for the $787,000. The Governor's Office of Energy is supposed to give that information out on the grant funding by October. We are hoping to hear by the end of September if we've received that. But those funds from GOFA are already ours and held for us, and they will not be put back into their kitty unless we do not receive our funding from Governor's Office of Energy. I met with the Mesquite Police Department and talked with them about some graffiti issues that we've been having in our community, and just to see if there was some ways that Overton Power could help with some of that. They're very responsive. We have one guy that, thankfully, the graffiti artists, they like to be known. They want their graffiti to be very similar. And so when they do get caught, then it's easy to define which all places they've got. They've already removed one guy from the streets, and we have one more that did actually get one of our new substations. So that's disappointing, because on a transformer, we have a much easier time getting that paint off than we do on our block wall. But so I had a very good meeting with him, and then we also talked about training. One thing that I wanted to share with you guys, we had a active shooter training that the police came in here and did for us. And as we had them walk our, they walked all of our area and gave us recommendations on, if you can escape, where do you go? Where do you have your staff meet? All kinds of things. We wanted a full assessment of our property. And when they went in this building upstairs, it's long, narrow hallways with all of those doors, and they said, gosh, this would be perfect for our SWAT training. And I'm like, you're welcome to do that if you guys want to come in and do some trainings on the weekend. So I met with Officer Fales, and I said, our offer still stands for that. If you guys want to do any training, we would be happy to facilitate that. And he said, well, we tend to break things. And I said, you know what would be great? You guys should use the water company. So while we want to support them, we've actually taken a step back on our offer to allow them to, like, kick down doors or any of those things for their training. We've visited with you guys about reaching out to WEC and the compliance requirements that will come with WEC. WEC staff will actually be in-house on August 27th and meet with us in Overton. Mr. Chair, I would like to visit with you in executive session, if that's okay, about some of the things that need to go along with that.
Okay, good.
We've also met with prospective developers, and again, we will talk about some of that in executive session as we have signed NDAs with both of those. I went to NREA with Jack. We traveled up to Kalliani, and that was hosted by Lincoln County. We had two federal lobbyists from NRECA that met with us. We discussed the fact that President Trump in 100 days has signed 141 executive orders. We can see a very clear switch in the mindset of our political leadership from fossil fuels with this administration, to fossil fuels, I should say, with this administration. Also, quick actions in NEPA reform. I asked them, as the financial incentives are sunsetting on both solar and wind generation, if they foresaw us getting any incentive for new gas generation. They smiled at that and then said no. What they do see, though, is that we will see those incentives through permitting reform and the ability to actually get generation sited and transmission to that generation sited. The other thing that they mentioned too, though, was that they are seeing that there may be some incentives for the small modular reactors, and we've talked about that. One of our neighboring utilities had a board member who was very interested in putting an SMR in their service territory, and they actually met with the administration. I have to read it. The administration of the Division of Planning, Nevada Agency for Nuclear Projects. They felt like they would have this meeting, and because of their location, it would be very well received. And what that entity came to tell them was that there will be no nuclear generation in the state of Nevada that would ever re-spark any talk for Yucca Mountain. That is a hard no. So as we talked through that, and Jack, correct me if I'm forgetting to say any piece of that, we talked in D.C. with Catherine Cortez Masto about her feelings on nuclear in our state, new gas generation, and then also, you know, still continuing to work on renewables, and we felt like we had a good talk. We also feel like we need to have some discussions with our governor as well about this and that mindset going forward, and so we're going to continue to pursue both of those. As far as the EPA power plant rule, I contributed a letter to President Trump's team asking for the repeal of that EPA power plant rule. That was a Biden-era ruling that he is considering. There's a couple of things that I think are very key to us and why I'm in support of that. One is the retirement of coal plants that still have life in them. And the second is that they have such stringent rules that if you build gas generation, you're only allowed to operate it at 40% of the time. And so I've contributed a letter, and that has been sent on. We will, I think, see fairly quickly some changes to that through the Trump administration. At NREA, we also heard from the BLM fire manager. And we spoke about, if you guys remember a few months ago, I told you that we've been working with them on a memorandum of understanding for fire mitigation. And then mostly the discussion went into the fire investigation. He indicated that there is no movement on the memorandum of understanding, as it is now bound up in legal with our neighboring investor-owned utility. And so we smiled and, you know, let him know that we're far easier to work with than sometimes our neighbor is, but that we share many of the same concerns that they have. And so we'll continue to work with the BLM, but I don't foresee that I will be bringing you guys any kind of documentation anytime soon. We received an application for our Parker Davis contract from Colorado River Commission. If you guys remember, that hydro contract expires in 2028. And so they have asked me to do a full application that is due by September 18th, and I will ensure that that is submitted on time. And then the last thing that I wanted to talk with you guys about, we have visited with you guys about the information that we are putting out to our customers. And in your guys' packet today, I gave you a paper copy of our quarterly newsletter that's called the What's Up. We put out earlier this year that that newsletter is now going solely online. And so there's multiple ways that you get that. If you are signed up for e-bill, when you receive your bill, you receive a link that takes you directly to our website so that you can see this. We also post this on social media. And then we have a print copy at front counters in both valleys for those people that want to actually get a piece of paper. And then as I was looking at this and visiting with Vernon about, we have such good information. I don't know how many of you as board members follow us on social media or how much time you spend on looking at our website. And so I just asked Vernon to give just a few, pick four or five things that we've posted recently that have been on our social media, just so you guys can get an idea of what we're putting out there. I encourage you guys to follow us on Facebook. I don't know how many of you guys are Facebookers, but there's good info that we're putting out. So I just wanted to share that with you guys. And that is my report, unless you guys have any questions for me.
Do you have any updates or, I guess, new information on Tenasca potential button and anything like that?
I met with Nick. Let me think. I think that was in July. And he said, when would you entertain contract talks? And I said, the day that you could lower my rate. Right. And so that is very much on his radar. And they're aware of that. We're, you know, only 7 months into our contract. And so I don't know how quickly that's going to happen, but he knows that I want my rate to go down. So I'm continuing to pursue that.
Okay, very good. Let's move on with item I here. Review possible OPD5 communication policy. This is for possible action.
Okay.
You want the current one up first or the clean version?
Well, we'll do this and then I'll give you. I put both of them out there because there was quite a bit. If you look, this policy was last revised in 2018. So I went through and gave you guys a red line version, but I also posted the clean version because it gets so hard to read the red line that I just wanted you guys to see. For the most part, there is no significant change. I went through and cleaned up. We have the reference of the district, and I changed all of that to OPD5. I just cleaned up some of the language and made it a little bit more appropriate to some of the things that we are currently doing. I changed, let me find what line it was on. I added that we would have safety. It is line number 6. Leadership and active participation in community and state initiatives with a focus on safety. That was never in there. Youth programs, rural community development, and building positive perception of these efforts. Small changes like that, but nothing that I think that any of you guys will find of major significance.
I move that we approve the communication policy as presented.
Well, very good. We have a motion.
A second.
Was that you, Randy?
Yeah.
We have a motion and a second. Everyone in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Excellent. J, review and possibility of OPD5 pay period policy for possible action.
This is the same thing. I went through and found this is old. It has not been revised since 2014. It said in our old policy that we would turn in paper timesheets. I did not remove that because there could be a day that we have a computer failure and people need to be able to submit a paper record of their work. And so I've just cleaned that up. The same thing. I removed the reference to district and changed that to OPD5, cleaned up some of the verbiage. But if you look on this red line version, very, very little changes. Just it was time for it to be reviewed.
Okay, very good. So we're looking for a motion. review of our pay periods?
I'll make a motion that we accept the review and possible approval of pay period policy OPD P.01.201.
Okay, excellent. We have a motion.
I'll second it.
Okay, we have a second. Everyone in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, K, review of possible for capital projects and budget allocation, possible action.
This is starting to take longer.
Ye of little faith, Bob.
Just add it on.
Okay, in June, I brought to you guys this presentation. We talked about that for the 2025 budget, you guys approved $32.6 million in that budget. And what we have done is, at the time of that budget, the jobs that we anticipated working on, we felt like we were only going to spend $22.4 million of those dollars. As we've looked and we've went through these projects, in my first 90 days, I told you that we were going to reevaluate the timing of all projects based on reliability for two reasons. One, there were a couple of projects that I felt like did not need to have cash spent now. And because of our reduction of margins and our cash being so much tighter, I felt we needed to look at that and redistribute those funds to projects that I felt were key. The other thing that has come to bear in this is that when we were looking at the Arrowhead and Painted Hills jobs, originally they told us that those transformers were going to take 3 years. We knew we were operating at over 70% in two of those substations, and it needed to be addressed, but the soonest we could get those transformers was 3 years. Virginia Transformers now come to us and said those will be delivered by the end of this year. So we've moved up in the queue. We had to make those payments. We were still anticipating doing those jobs. We just weren't anticipating the cash outlay in 2025. As we have looked at these projects, we feel that those projects are important. Kevin has given you guys a lot of that same presentation tonight. And if you want, I will go through every one of these projects again. I want you guys as a board to understand that we have taken very seriously the allocation of these funds and the projects that we feel absolutely need to be done in this year. If we postponed some of the jobs that we proposed, we had cap banks, security projects, the crew barn and truck barn in Overton, acquiring property for the Mesquite warehouse, the Painted Hills sub cap banks phase two, and more security projects that we've all postponed, and then reallocated some of that money to projects that were not anticipated for 2025. It requires for us, if we want to maintain our $10 million cash threshold, which we have always set as our three highest power bill months. 10 million used to be our three highest months and a little bit. Now we're paying $3 million just to Tenasca in our highest months. But still, if we were to keep our cash balance at about $10 million, that would require that we would borrow $9 million in 2025. Now I want to reiterate that the money that we would be borrowing is not for our monthly bills. This is not to supplement cash flow. This is to ensure that we get to continue to do these projects that we're working on. The other thing that I presented to you guys as we went through each of these projects was that there is fees associated with us pushing off some of those projects. We have contractors that are on site. Randall reported that they're drilling for the poles right now. If we said, okay, we're not going to spend the cash and complete those projects right now, there's fees associated with that. One of those that we looked at, which I believe Randall can correct me if I'm wrong, was the tortoise upgrade. If we postpone that job, the penalty for restaging was $500,000 well, it doesn't make sense for us to spend $500,000 to avoid spending some of the cash. So we went through each one of these projects and told you what we felt were the important projects to do. Some of these dollars have changed slightly that Kevin and Randall reported to you, because this I presented to you in June. We've moved forward some of that spending, and then one of those jobs has been completed. But at the end of all of this, what I'm proposing is that we move ahead with the projects that we feel are our highest value for reliability, and we propose to postpone projects that we feel do not directly relate to reliability. I think security is still very, very important. I think it's important to you. But if we have to choose something that we're going to postpone on spending through 2025, I think that's a good fit. Now, on two of these, I want to call to your attention that on the Arrowhead sub, we only approved a budget of $3 million. We say that it's going to cost $11.3 million to complete, and that requires $8.3 million more in budget. All of that is not going to be spent in 2025. The remainder will be presented to you guys for approval in the 2026 budget. But there's additional budget costs for this job that we did not put forth for you in 2025. And there was one more. Let me get to it. It is this, the Tortoise 120 MVA transformer. And that is, again, we approved a budget of $2.2 million. It's going to cost $5.5 million to complete. That requires an additional budget of $3.3 million. Not all of that is going to be spent in 2025. But again, this is one of those transformers that got moved up in the queue. And so it's coming sooner rather than later. So as we looked at our cash and said, if we borrowed no money for 2025 and we moved on with the projects as proposed, we would end the year with a cash balance of $2.8 million. Let me show you where I'm looking. Right here is 2025. If we continued to spend what we anticipated for 2026 with no borrowing, we would be negative $7.9 million in cash. So we have a proposal to borrow $9 million in 2025. That would allow us to end the year with $11.6 million. We then say we would need an additional $9 million in borrowing in 2026 for the completion of those projects and other projects we have slated for 2026. That would again leave us with a cash balance of $8.6 million. So where does it leave us with borrowing? Currently, we have $43.5 million in long-term debt. If we borrowed $9 million, and Jonathan just put that we would put the entire $9 million on October 1st, so that we would have to make a payment by then. So you guys would see where would that leave us. We would end the year with a debt of $52.5 million. He then shows you in 2026, if we borrowed an additional $9 million, we would end the year with $57 million in long-term debt. We would make our payments through 2027. And as you know, many of our loans will be paid off in 2028. By 2028, we are back to $47.5 million. So we would borrow $18 million, and our long-term debt would show that we had increased by $4 million in that four-year term. Well, three-year term, essentially. In June, I presented that the rates that we were receiving was at 5.62 with discounts. That brought us to 5.17 for the interest rate on a 30-year loan. Jonathan just pulled new information last week, and that went to 5.54 with interest discounts would be 5.09 at 30 years. One of the requests that I got was to show if we did borrowing, what does that do to the ratios that we present to you? So at the top, you can see equity as a percentage of assets. For 2025, we are at 60, what did you present tonight?
68.68,
okay. If we borrowed $9 million, you see that is this column here. If we borrowed $9 million in 2025, that would change our equity as a percentage of assets to 65.3%. If we borrowed another $9 million, so that's adding $18 million, that changes us to 62.5. And then you have a goal set of 57% for our equity as a percentage of assets. So Jonathan just said, how much could we borrow to stay within our goal? $38 million. That's how much we could and still hit that ratio. Modified debt service coverage is at the bottom. We're currently at 1.85. If we add $9 million, we would end the year at approximately 1.84. If we added another $9 million of debt in 2026, it shows that we would end at 2.16, and then in 2027, that would go back to the 1.94. Just as a reminder, our debt covenant is 1.35 for that. And so I do think that that's important as you guys are making these decisions. It's not just about cash flow. It's also about how is it going to affect our financial statements. And so Jonathan put together this information for you guys to be able to review. I also wanted to talk with you guys about the debt structuring and what we've been thinking of. I think it's really important for us to be dynamic in this rate environment. If we say we need to borrow $9 million, there is nothing that says if you approve for us to borrow that we need to go on Friday and borrow $9 million. Our cash flow doesn't require that. I think that what we could do, and Jonathan, I'm not sure if I didn't. I think that what we could do is look and say, if in October we needed $2 million, we could borrow $2 million in October. We're already approved for $9 million through our initial loan offerings through CFC. We could borrow $2 million, but one thing I think that's important is because of the rate environment we're in, instead of locking that for 30 years, we could put in a repricing. The shortest term that you can do a repricing is 3 years. So even if we borrowed $1 million, we could put in a repricing in 3 years. And I think that gives us a little bit of leverage as those loans pay off in 2028, that if the rates are great, we lock that repricing for the remainder of the 30 years. If the rates aren't great, we look at our cash flow at that time and maybe we choose to just pay off that $1 million piece. It gives us a little bit of flexibility. And so as we've talked with the investment advisors at Morton and our AVP at CSC to ensure that we could do this, both of them recommended that that's the smartest option, is to piecemeal out our borrowing as we need it. The other thing that I think that flexibility gives us, if it's the pleasure of the board, is these invoices, if they're going to come in for those transformers or some of that work, they may say that they're going to invoice us in November, but we might not actually get it till January. Well, I'm not going to borrow money until we need it. And so we may see that some of that borrowing we could push off too. And so one of the things that flexibility requires, though, is for you as a board to allow for Jonathan to allow that cash flow to be a little bit dynamic in those balances. We say we want $10 million, but there may be months that he reports to you that we're down to $7 million. Then we borrow and it goes back up. I don't want us to have a hard and fast rule that the day we're going to hit $10 million, we have to go out and borrow if the rates are terrible. So we're asking for a little bit of flexibility there.
I have a couple of questions on that.
Okay.
How long does it take to get, if we do, I think we should do that. How long does it take to get money? Like they say, okay, here's the invoice. Can you get money in a month, a week?
They tell us that we can have it within 24 hours if we request it before 2 p.m. Because we've already went through the loan process and we're already approved. I would say we would never allow ourselves to get to the point that we had to have the cash within 24 hours, but we're talking days.
Okay, that's yeah. Great. I'm comfortable to go way below 10,000.
10 million.
Or 10 million, yeah. And then...
So with that
your comment, we actually are approved for $9 million. We would have to go through another approval process to do, essentially do the rest.
But we're only proposing $9 million for 2025. And then my thing would be that when we present to you the 2026 budget and we talk about what's left on those projects, what new projects do we need to take on, and how does that affect our cash, we would then come back to you for another round of borrowing. I'm showing you $9 million now and $9 million in 2026 because I believe we're going to have to borrow more money in 2026, and I don't want to just present to you guys 2025 and then in 2 months say, just kidding, I need another $9 million. I want that to be on your radar.
Your spreadsheet shows in 2027 we're going to be needing more money again, right?
Based on the projects that we have now, some of that we have to present to you guys and say, how much are we going to put into security? What other projects do we have? When we did our rewrite of our priorities, we only rewrote through 25 and 26, and then we pushed everything else to 27. So that 27 number is inflated because everything we postponed, we just moved to 27.
Okay. Now how much is it going to cost us a month for that $9 million?
Are we going to have to raise rates? Is that
it?
What's our capital margin going to look like with that new expense?
It's a $500,000 a year in payments.
Yes.
Yeah, $500,000 for the year. Mm-hmm. For the year, that's what the payments are.
Right now, our
$40,000 a month.
Our current is
1.4 is what we pay a quarter.
Yeah, a quarter.
Mm-hmm.
So we're at 48.
$425.
Just wondering how it reflects on our budget and our, mm-hmm. and our margins and how significant it is for the rest of the year. It's $500,000 just for 2025.
Mm-hmm.
Just in the last 5 months.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
That's right?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Yes.
If you borrow $2 million, say, in October or November, the rate is set at that time. Is that correct? And then if you borrow $4 million a few months later, it's another loan at a new rate. Is that correct or no?
Yes, the rate is set on the day that you secure it.
Great.
Yeah, in this rate environment, the rates are going down. We're seeing that trending, so.
We're hoping. We have the option. I mean, there's an opportunity in September and then, October and December, but they're saying September and December. So I don't want you guys to feel in any way that we are trying to time the market, play the market. That's not our role here. But I also think that it is our responsibility that we do not lock borrowing that we don't need. We did that in 23 because the rate environment was so incredibly good that it made sense to do that. It doesn't make sense for us to do that now.
Yeah. It kind of does make sense to, not necessarily to wait, but basically to wait.
Yeah.
Don't rush into it.
Yeah.
Drag your feet.
Yeah.
So to do, do we need to have an agenda item or something to lower that $10 million thing, or can we just...
No, you just get to set that. That's not... there's no written policy for that. We're just asking that if you approve for us to do this borrowing, that you grant leeway to the staff for both the timing of the borrowing, and that includes the dipping into our cash funds for months when we need to. And, of course, we would report that to you.
I would just really love to see a comparison of the budget as is compared to this change. If we're going to be spending another $500,000, what that looks like on our projection for our budgets, and if we're still comfortable. I think we barely will be, but we're going to be getting down to the bottom of what we're comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
I'd just like to see that.
So are you talking about the overall margin?
Yeah, just the budget.
Dollars, not percentages. You want to see. Yeah.
And correction, and we can do that. Correction, actually, so 9 million would be, it would be a total of 600,000 a year for principal and interest.
So it's 300,000 for this year.
It would only be 150.
Only borrow it.
It actually only be 150 if we did the whole 9 in this year.
And I'm going to, Stephen, take me back to the first page, please.
So the majority of that would be interest. So it would be 467,000 in interest. So that would reduce our margin by that. And then the principal doesn't affect our margin, but we have to repay it. So.
Yep. So I only have the cash flow on here, but you can see that for 2025, we anticipated $5.6 million in margins. We're about $1 million off from that. Were we still a million now?
$250,000.
So, well, because we made a good month this month. Good job, Jonathan. That being said, even though we've had a mild summer and we have been a little bit off on our margins, even if we had to pay $400,000 more in interest, that would reduce that to a margin of $5.2 million. So we're well within still our bandwidth, I think, for borrowing that money and meeting all of our margin needs.
But next year, so if you looked at 2026, if we borrowed an additional 9, it'd be
That's what I want to see.
It'd be 1.2 million less than that margin of 8.
Mm-hmm. We'll be down
into
six,
high sixes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I do think that there are other future talks that we need to have with those projects. I think we need to really evaluate, and we had a management meeting yesterday and talked about our capital budget and what's realistic to get done next year. If we're working so much on all of these, we may, on all of our reliability projects, we might not do as many capital projects, so we may see some reduction in that, but we're going to have to talk about rates as well. And so there's many pieces to this, but the thing that I want to focus on tonight is we have projects that I think are key that need to keep moving, and we need cash to fund those so that we can keep moving, and for us to have that cash requires some borrowing in 2025.
I'm comfortable with it. We have great ratios, we have room, we're financially healthy, we need to do the jobs. I'm supportive.
Yeah, for the 9?
Yeah, well, it's already been approved. It's just, we just have to approve, you know, basically the process that's being done. Mm-hmm.
I would add with the caveat that I would encourage even to borrow.
Delay
the borrowing as long as possible, as long as interest rates are dropping.
Was that emotion?
Emily, yes,
I don't.
She told you about we're drawing down our cash. We do have certain requirements about how much cash OPD's got to have.
Thank you for remembering
in
that.
In the bank.
Yes.
Like, for example, it showed today, I believe it was 5.5 plus another 9 at Morton's. Mm-hmm. We have to, what is our requirement for, mm-hmm. we have to have so much of our total utility bill.
So on our Tenasca bill, our Tenasca contract, they mirrored with our Morgan Stanley contract, which was our 3 highest months. So.
Which requires us to have how much? Because right now, like I said, we've got about 14.
That'd be five. About 9 million.
So we can draw down 5, and then we're done. I mean, we cannot. Now, of course, you get another 9, then we're plenty.
Who's the enforcer of that? Or what's the consequences if we go to 8?
Well, we could be in breach of our contract.
It would be breach of contract with Tenasca, but we only report that at year end. We send them our year-end financials. So if we dropped our financials down to 7 million or 6 million in October, but we were up for the end of the year, we're still within our
contract.
Yes.
Right now we're safe. We're like 14.5.
I'm not sure. Mike, do you have a question, or are we just getting feedback?
I'm listening, but I think the real smart thing here is that you're going to wait until you need the money to borrow it, because I think the environment, everybody's predicting rates are going to go down, so we should take advantage of that. But I also think that we ought to be very cautious about adding new projects that are not absolutely necessary, that we don't quickly, well, okay, now we got the money, let's build this and let's put that in. For instance, some of the things are 70% loaded. Transformers go up to 125 easy. And so those things are important, but sometimes they don't need to be rushed when you're short on money or money is very expensive. It costs our customers a lot more. So I think we just need to watch that very carefully, but I think your strategy is pretty darn good. That's it.
And speaking on loaded transformers, I was speaking with Craig Wood. He works on transformers for Nevada Power. He's on their substation group. They run their transformers at 90 to 105%. Three of them blew up in the last month, and they don't have replacements. So I think our policy of not going that high is very prudent, and it gives us room for growth in this, you know, that we can make those plans, and it's not an emergency when we're trying to do the work.
So. Well, I would prefer to spend that nine, reboot all that, and not be in that position, as far as I'm concerned. Why not get ahead of the curve instead of behind it? Because who knows when you get the next transformer for replacement, if that does happen. 18 months out, 2 years out, what is
did that? You just second the motion?
Something I would like to add to that also is,
thank you.
As we take this, well, this Mesquite sub offline, we can only do it for three or four months at a time, and then our summer load comes back on, and we need every bit of that capacity because we're already overloaded on those. So once we take that down, the longer we wait, the further we push this into the future, that window shrinks considerably. We found that out on our 138 line with our...
But I think to Melissa's point is getting those projects online now and not waiting so long till we run into a catastrophic failure, is an issue.
We want to get
that in the forefront and let's get it done.
We want to get taken care of before it becomes a problem.
Absolutely, because then Melissa doesn't want to answer that nor do I want her.
And it would be you guys.
Have we had a motion in a second?
We have.
Well, kind of, stored and not really.
I make that motion, Bob.
I want to make one more comment before whatever that happens. I kind of agree with Mike, but if these projects that are already in progress, especially if we've already spent a lot of money on them, we should finish them up so that we can take advantage of them. We haven't just spent that money and now it's on hold. Uh-huh. And then, like the transformer, we're already committed to them. I mean, that's, we got to make that work. But where I agree with him is, like if there's new projects that potentially we could put off, we should definitely look at that real hard. And I think that's the plan.
That's exactly what we did, was reprioritizing. And again, I want to say that 2027 looked like we had a huge influx. That's because everything that we weren't doing, I moved. And so we're going to reprioritize when we do the 2026 budget, 27 and 28, to give you guys a better idea of what we're looking at there, too.
Can I just make a formal motion then?
It's probably a good idea to restate the motion, because Becky's got to write it down.
It'd be real helpful.
The motion to approve the redistribution of funds to projects and borrowing as presented.
Thank you.
Okay, we have a motion.
I'll second
that's
that.
It. Okay.
And we have a second by Randy. We got it down, Monday, somewhere.
We're good.
Is that all you guys did?
All in favor.
All in favor?
Aye. All in favor.
Aye.
Any opposed?
I don't have to include anything for the cash. We just, they've just given us direction on when we can borrow it.
Okay. Breach of contract.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. Well, that brings us to L, public comments.
all our public kissed up to Kyle and then left, so.
I'll talk to them tomorrow.
Yeah, you let them have it.
Not hearing many, are there any trustee comments?
Again, I'd just like to mirror what Jack said. I really appreciate it. We had a great training session down at the CRC. I really have a beautiful facility there. I really enjoyed it there.
Very good.
It's good.
Okay.
I got one comment.
Okay.
If there's going to, like, for next month or whatever, can you guys look at, with these borrowings, if you anticipate, if nothing changes, rates having to go up? I don't know if that's possible.
It's just the margin's going to dip $400,000+, and we have to decide if we're okay with that.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
That'll be the rate consideration.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I
don't understand that question.
I know you can't guess the weather.
He wants to know what is rate implications and if we're going to have an increase anytime soon. Thank you.
Not if we can keep getting margins at $1.1 million a month.
Well, we don't have that many large jobs, so.
Okay, item N, approval of next board meeting, Wednesday, September 17th, Overton Board.
I make that motion, Overton Board.
Okay, we have a motion.
Second.
Okay, we have a second. Mr. Bunker, everyone in favor, say aye.
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 Okay, any opposition? Any opposed? Okay, very good.
I do have executive session, but I need a 2-minute break before we.
Oh, yeah. I think we'll leave in about 10, 15 minutes. So.
We will be fast. I'll give a 1-minute break.
Let's take a quick break and then we'll resume.